This is continuing impeachment coverage on the Jason Rance Show.
Special edition of the Jason Rance Show. This is the only show and the only station that's going to take you this into the process. Today, the House impeachment managers started day one of their case. Yesterday was a debate all about rules and procedure. Today is all about Adam Schiff trying to make his case. He spoke earlier this morning for 2.5 hours. There was no evidence that was discussed in any detail because they don't have any evidence of a crime. None whatsoever. They have a lot of opinions that they're presenting as fact. That's true. But we heard absolutely nothing new today. Just a lot of claims without any evidence. And that's why late last night, Pat Cipollone, the president's lawyer, said, "You guys are spending all day without any actual facts."
For those of you keeping score at home, they haven't even started yet. We're here today. We came hoping to have a trial. They spent the entire day telling you and the American people that they can't prove their case. I could have told you that in 5 minutes.
It got a little hot last night. Right now, we're waiting for them to return from recess, so I want to talk about what happened last night. It got all started with Jerry Nadler, who was making a case and going after Republicans in a pretty despicable way.
Will you vote to allow all of the relevant evidence to be presented here? Or will you betray your pledge to be an impartial juror? Will you bring Ambassador Bolton here? Will you permit us to present you with the entire record of the president's misconduct? Or will you instead choose to be complicit in the president's cover-up?
Do what we say, or you're involved in a criminal cover-up. Say yes to everything we demand, or you are in a criminal cover-up. He's almost sounding like a hostage taker.
So far, I'm sad to say, I see a lot of senators voting for a cover-up, voting to deny witnesses, an absolutely indefensible vote, obviously a treacherous vote. A vote against an honest consideration of the evidence of the, against the president. A vote against an honest trial. A vote against the United States.
You're voting against the United States, according to Jerry Nadler, because you don't want to allow House Democrats to do in the Senate what they should have done, what they could have done in the House. And at that point, and maybe because it was after midnight their time, Pat Cipollone he was done.
And you don't deserve, and we don't deserve, what just happened. Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations against our team. He made false allegations against all of you. He accused you of a cover-up. He's been making false allegations against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you, for the way you've addressed this body. This is the United States Senate. You're not in charge here.
This is the United States Senate. You don't get to pull this kind of nonsense. And at that point, Chief Justice John Roberts finally spoke out and scolded both sides for a lack of civil discourse. But it feels like, based on the way Cipollone responded, Chief Roberts was probably more in line, Justice Roberts, more in line with the Trump impeachment defense team.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that high a standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
They should remember where they are, the U.S. Senate. That's exactly the language that Pat Cipollone used. But the House Democrats, they don't care where they are. They don't care where you stand. They care about one thing, which is going after this president. They decided to move forward with a case despite having the evidence that would normally be needed if you take impeachment seriously. In fact, Alan Dershowitz, a legal member, a constitutional law professor, but he's a member of the legal team for Donald Trump, was on Fox News to say the framers would have rejected these articles of impeachment.
Well, I've been spending the last 2 days with dusty books going back to the 18th and 19th centuries, reading Blackstone and reading the debates over the Constitution and reading the trial of Andrew Johnson. And I've come to the firm conclusion that the two elements of impeachment directed against President Trump are unconstitutional. The framers would have rejected abuse of power, would have rejected obstruction of Congress. They rejected things like it, maladministration. They didn't want to turn the United States into a British parliamentary system where Congress controls the executive and where a prime minister or a president can be voted out of office by a simple majority vote of the legislature. So they created very strict criteria, treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. Other high crimes and misdemeanors means crimes like treason and bribery.
Did you get that at all from the House Democrats over the course of the impeachment phase in the House? Did you get any of that? Did you get a crime at all? I know they talked about crimes. They talked about quid pro quo. They talked about bribery. They talked about Russian interference and how the president was basically a member of Putin's inside cabinet. They made the point that he is a literal Manchurian candidate. That's what Congressman Denny Heck of Tacoma said multiple times. And it's weird that none of those crimes actually made their way into the articles of impeachment. Here's Jay Sekulow of Trump's legal team.
Well, look, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, we'll challenge aggressively the case that they're putting forward based on what we're hearing. And we also have an affirmative case that we're going to make as well. So we're going to do both.
He has an affirmative case that he's going to make. An affirmative case. Meaning, you've made all of these arguments about how the president violated the law, but you didn't actually include them at all. At all. In your argument, not even a little bit. You make these outrageous claims, but they're not backed at all with any sort of fact, with any sort of fact witness. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. But you know what? These Democrats are doing it anyway. And they're doing it with impunity because they know that they're going to get the support of so many members in the media. When you listen to the way Jeffrey Toobin, who's CNN's legal analyst, talks about Adam Schiff's performance today, it's totally embarrassing.
I thought it was dazzling. I thought the way he wove through both the facts of the case and the historical context was really remarkable. It was the second best courtroom address, since it's like a courtroom, that I ever heard, after a prosecutor named Jonathan Benedict in the Michael Skakel case in Connecticut was the best I ever heard, and it's still the best. But that was, when you consider the volume of information he covered, using the video, as I think Jake mentioned earlier, the witness testimony, the documents, it's very persuasive stuff. And you know, if people are listening,
that drool,
it's very hard to imagine that they will think that the Democrats and the House managers are just making this up.
Making this up. They literally had no fact witnesses. Literally none. That's why right now, when the standard is going to be higher because they don't have a bunch of toady Democrats who also hate the president in large enough numbers to actually move forward and remove him from office, that's why they're trying to get witnesses like Bolton. They don't have anything. And kudos, by the way, to Fox News, who's been covering this honestly. I've been watching both CNN as well as Fox News and some MSNBC sprinkled around, because I want to see how the media is talking about it, because the way that the American people are going to see this is going to be shaped by what it is they're saying, how they're presenting this, how they're framing everything that Adam Schiff is saying? CNN was all in on the Democratic side. No shock whatsoever. Don Lemon, for example, last night on CNN made the point that, oh man, all these Republicans, they're just voting down party line. Well, so are the Democrats, but you didn't say that because you wanted to frame this in a way that's anti-Republican. Adam Schiff today lied many, many times. In fact, Chris Wallace over at Fox News called him out for completely misrepresenting a statement that he kept wanting to say that Mick Mulvaney was saying, the chief of staff for the president.
And that's not what Mick Mulvaney said at all. He did say get over it, but he was talking specifically about the fact that there is politics in foreign policy, and specifically that when Barack Obama is conducting his foreign policy, it's going to have a different political flavor and a different policy agenda than when Donald Trump is. And each president, they're elected, is fulfilling his mandate. He wasn't saying that this kind of quid pro quo, get over it, just accept it. He was talking specifically about the idea of policy and politics in a foreign policy agenda. So, quite frankly, and I think that Adam Schiff made an effective argument for his side of the case, but he completely misrepresented what Mick Mulvaney said when he said get over it.
Did you hear any of that from Jeffrey Toobin? Oh, no, sorry. He was fawning over it all. It was dazzling. The most amazing thing he's ever seen. That's the difference in coverage. And it's particularly important because the vast majority of the American people, they didn't watch today. They didn't listen today. I did. Literally all day. But most people aren't. And they're getting their news from people like Jeffrey Toobin over at CNN. And that's a problem. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. We're going to continue our live coverage of the impeachment trial. They're in a recess right now. They're expected to come back any moment.
You're listening to continuing impeachment coverage on AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show as we continue a special edition of the show as we are taking you into the heart of impeachment. We'll be doing it every single day during the impeachment process because this is historic, because this is important. It's important for you guys to hear specifically what the Democrats are saying. And I see some of your text messages at 1-800-465-8770, and I hear you. You don't like it when we play the Adam Schiff audio because it drives you nuts. Because you can tell that he's lying. You can tell that he's not authentic. You can tell that he's pushing very specific talking points meant not to appeal to you because you guys are smart, but to appeal to people who have no idea what's going on right now, which is frankly the vast majority of people. They know an impeachment is going on. They don't know all the details. They don't. But it's important for you to hear what it is they're saying because 2020 is on the line. This country is on the line. Bernie Sanders might be the nominee on the Democratic side. Do you want the president going into the 2020 reelection campaign weakened by impeachment, or do you want to be able to stand up to the trolls on Twitter, to the trolls in your real life, pushing incorrect, flat-out lies coming from Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? Do you want that? No. Because there's a lot more than the presidency on the line. This is not about Trump in a weird way. It's directly about him, but really, big picture, this isn't about Trump. This is about the presidency, and this is about the future of this country. I don't want to become a socialist nation. Don't want that. And I know you guys don't want that. But a very easy way to justify not voting for Donald Trump for a lot of Democrats and independents, and yes, some Republicans, is to believe the lies that these House managers today are pushing forward. They can justify voting for Bernie Sanders, even though they don't necessarily like the socialist aspect, but they can say to themselves, you know what, I'd rather do that and take my chances than have a crook in the White House. Have a corrupt president. That's not good for us. That's why you need to listen to this audio. That's why you need to know the arguments being made by the House impeachment managers. That's why you have to hear the fact-checking that we're providing on this show. Now, the good news in all of this, it is very clearly engaging the Trump base, the Republican Party base, the activist base that you need to get really, really excited for the candidate who's up for election or re-election in this case. And Brad Parscale, the campaign manager for President Trump, he was on with CBS this morning, and he said people are getting more activated as a result of these attacks on the president.
It does help with the base. It excites the base. Remember, turnout's important. There's tens of millions of people that will show up and vote for the president that might have not showed up. Look, 8.8 million disengaged in 2018. Voted for Trump in 2016, didn't show up. There's millions now that are engaged to show up. And I will tell you, the president has a larger base now significantly than since 2016.
He has a larger base now than 2016 because a lot of people who are armed with facts know what's going on. Now, right now, the Senate is about to get back into session. The senators have returned. Chief Justice John Roberts is there and ready. And here is Adam Schiff, who's speaking at the podium.
Just so senators have an idea of the evening, we expect to go about 2 to 2.5 hours. I'll make a presentation. Representative Lofgren from California will make a presentation. I'll make a final presentation, and then we will be done for the evening. As an encouraging voice told me, keep it up, but don't keep it up too long. So we will do our best not to keep it up too long.
Should have taken that advice.
I'm going to turn now to the part of the chronology that picks up right after that July 25th call. And walk through the increasingly explicit pressure campaign waged on Ukraine in order to get President Trump's deliverable, the investigations meant to tarnish his opponent and help his reelection. Now, remember, by the end of July, Ukraine was aware of President Trump's requests for investigation to help his political efforts and had come to know that President Trump put a freeze on security assistance. So this is by the end of July. They also clearly understood that President Trump was withholding an Oval Office meeting until those investigations were announced. Both were very critical to Ukraine as a sign of U.S. support and as a matter of their national security. And their national security, of course, implicates our national security. In the weeks after the July 25th call, President Trump's handpicked representatives escalated their efforts to get the public announcement of the investigations from Ukraine. So let's go through this step by step, because the 3 weeks following the July 25th call tell so much about this pressure scheme. Let's start with July 26. On July 26, so this is the day after the call, Ambassador Volker sends a text message to Giuliani. And that text message says, "Hi, Mr. Mayor. You may have heard the president had a great call with Ukrainian president yesterday. Exactly the right messages as we discussed. Please send dates when you will be in Madrid. I am seeing Yermak tomorrow morning. He will come to you in Madrid. Thanks for your help, Kurt." So here we are the day after that call. As my colleague demonstrates, this same day, so July 26, the date of that second infamous call between President Trump this time and Gordon Sondland that you heard the diplomat David Holmes describe. So that's same day, July 26, that we're talking about right now, where there's this text message. Now, of course, in that July 25th call, the president wants to connect Rudy Giuliani with the president of Ukraine and his people. And so this is a follow-up where Ambassador Volker is saying to Giuliani, it was a great call with Ukraine president, exactly the right messages as we discussed. And we know, of course, those messages were the need to do this political investigation. Please send dates when you'll be in Madrid. I'm seeing Yermak tomorrow morning. He will come to you in Madrid. So here is Ambassador Volker, one of the three amigos, following up, arranging this meeting between Giuliani and the Ukrainians. Giuliani replied, setting a meeting in Europe with President Zelensky's top aide for the very next week. Quote, "I will arrive on August 1 and until 5, he wrote. Now remember, on July 22nd, so a few days before this and before the call, Ambassador Volker had connected Giuliani originally with Yermak, and they agreed to meet. So this is a follow-up. You have that arrangement being made by Volker and Giuliani before the call, then you have the call, and now you have the follow-up to arrange the meeting in Madrid. And so they do meet in Madrid. This is August 2nd. Andrei Yermak, Zelensky's top aide, flew to Madrid, meets with Rudy Giuliani, who they know represented the president's interests. Both Giuliani and Yermak walk away from this meeting in Madrid, clearly understanding that a White House meeting is linked to Zelensky's announcement of the investigations. In separate conversations with Giuliani and Yermak after this Madrid meeting, Volker said he learned that Giuliani wanted the Ukrainians to issue a statement, including specific mentions of the two investigations that the president wanted. According to Ambassador Volker's testimony, Yermak told him that his meeting with Giuliani was very good and immediately added that the Ukrainians asked for a White House meeting during the week of September 16th. Yermak presses Volker on the White House meeting date, saying that he was waiting for confirmation. Maybe you know the date. And this is a recurrent theme that we've seen through the text messages and other documents, and that is the recurrent request for this meeting, the pressing for this meeting by the Ukrainians because it was so important to them. Giuliani's objective was clear to Ambassadors Volker and Sondland, who took over communications with Yermak. Here's Ambassador Sondland.
I first communicated with Mr. Giuliani in early August, several months later. Mr. Giuliani emphasized that the president wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing Ukraine to look into the corruption issues. Mr. Giuliani specifically mentioned the 2016 election, including the DNC server, and Burisma as two topics of importance to the president.
Now, what they won't tell you in this, and Adam Schiff certainly won't tell you, is that they have no actual fact witnesses to tie any of this to withholding of funds for the basis of helping President Trump's reelection campaign. He won't play the audio of Ambassador Sondland saying the president said no quid pro quo. He won't play any audio of the ambassador saying he never, ever, ever was told that they would have to do something in exchange to get the money released to them. They won't play any of that. But you need to be aware that that's the actual testimony that Ambassador Sondland gave. You're listening to special coverage of the trial impeachment of the president in the Senate. It's Adam Schiff. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text or call in if you have any questions about what's going on. I think it's imperative for all of us to be prepared to be able to talk intelligently about exactly what's going on. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask them, and I will try to answer as many as humanly possible. 1-800-465-8770.
You're listening to continuing impeachment coverage on AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show as we're taking a deep dive into the day's events concerning day one from the impeachment managers on the Democratic side making their argument against the president, explaining to the Senate why they should vote to remove the president from office, and yet they've not actually provided any evidence of a crime. There's a lot of speculation that a crime was committed. There was a lot of complaints about decisions that Democrats didn't like. But they did not, in fact, show you anything new. Not a single thing was said today that has not been said in the past. Literally, not a single thing is new. Not one thing is new. And yet they think that the senators on the Republican side are going to suddenly change their view on all of this. And they believe that the American people are going to change their view on all of this. They believe that if they make the same argument over and over and over again over the course of 24 hours across 3 days, that somehow that's going to connect with the American people. And in a lot of ways, I think Adam Schiff, who's the lead in all of this, he's his own worst enemy. This is a guy who loves to be in front of a camera. He loves it. A lot of people don't realize what his name is. That's the funny thing. He's done hundreds of press avails, hundreds of interviews on television. but people don't really know what his name is. He's trying to change that by delivering these faux impassioned speeches about how what the president has done is just pushing us one step closer to a monarchy. And oh my gosh, this republic will not exist if we don't kick him out of office. And so he decided earlier today to deliver in his opening remarks 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours. And he provided not a single thing that's new. And what's interesting about that is, of course, the media will cherry pick small moments out of the speech, out of the introduction today, and they'll present it. And someone at home who's maybe not paying that close attention, but they watch the evening news in Mukilteo or Marysville or Sumner, and they're getting their 30-second clip followed by a couple minutes of analysis on NBC Nightly News or wherever it is they watch. They're not getting 2.5 hours. If it takes you 2.5 hours to make a case that's supposedly very, very, very cut and dry, how do you think it's going to connect with people who only expect to get some of their news in quick sound bites? By him trying to get the attention of the nation, he's actually making it harder for people to follow the case. Right now, on the Senate floor, they're going through, they're literally just reading text messages with no context that's honest. They're just reading text messages. Do you think someone right now on the East Coast who's watching this over dinner is moved? Do you think someone listening right now on the drive home from Renton to Tacoma, you think they're moved? No. He hasn't provided anything new, but he does provide a lot of opinions. Like this one.
No other American could seek to obstruct an investigation into his own wrongdoing this way. No other American could use the vast powers and levers of his government to conduct a corrupt scheme to benefit themselves.
Except, just real quick, and I'll let him finish. I mean, there was that whole thing about Eric Holder withholding documents during a House investigation led by Republicans, the Fast and Furious investigation, trying to find out all the details involved in the federal gun running scandal that led to people literally dying. I mean, in that case, he didn't provide anything to the House until they sued. But okay, sorry. Continue, pencil neck. Adam Schiff.
And then use those same powers to suppress evidence and bar any cooperation with the authorities investigating them. Not a police chief, not a mayor, not a governor.
But yes, an attorney general. Sorry. I'm sorry. Stop giving me a look, Producer Payton. I had to interrupt.
Not any elected official in the country, and certainly not any non-elected official in the country. All those folks watching us from around the country, You know what would happen to them if they defied a lawful subpoena.
They would be treated as a hero, as was the case with Eric Holder.
They got a subpoena commanding them to appear. You know what would happen to them, because they're not above the law. They'd be arrested. They'd be detained. They'd be incarcerated. They would be forced to comply.
Forced to comply by who? Forced to comply by who? Any guesses, Producer Payton? Who would force them to comply with a subpoena? Say court.
Court.
That's. I'm so glad you knew that. Thank you, Producer Payton.
I'm a boy genius.
You are. You really are. A court would force the individual witnesses who choose not to comply with a subpoena to actually comply. They didn't go to the courts. They didn't go to the courts. The president said, I'm not going to help you in this impeachment sham, and so we're exerting executive privilege. Now, I think someone can reasonably say simply exerting executive privilege across the board is an abuse of executive privilege. We can have that debate. In fact, that's why the court is there, to actually settle that debate. You have both sides making the arguments. Adam Schiff did not want to go to the court for one simple reason. He knew he would lose. Or at the bare minimum, he knew there was a likelihood, not a certainty, but a likelihood that he would lose. And when you tell the American people, you need to have access to this document or to this witness in order to impeach, and then a judge comes back and says, sorry, you don't get access to that document or to that witness, you can't then come back and say, okay, we're going to impeach anyway. Because you just said you're not going to be able to do it without those pieces of information. He did not want to risk it because this is not going after the president for breaking the law. That's not what this is about. This isn't about saving the republic from becoming a monarch, a monarchy. This has nothing to do with that. They don't like this president. He's not supposed to be there. He's just some brash, crass business person who was a reality TV show host. He's not supposed to be president. Did you see the way he tweeted? He said a bad word. We don't like that. Do you see what he's doing at our border? He's putting up a wall. We can't allow for that. Bernie Sanders the other day said he would consider tearing down the wall at the border. He's not supposed to be president. And this is how they take him out. They wound him so that when he goes up against either Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Michael Bennett, let's pretend he's still a viable candidate. We've weakened him enough that maybe we can win because they know that they're not going to be able to win just going up against President Trump one-on-one without some kind of scandal. Because at the end of the day, most of us look at one issue that we vote on. Not everybody, but most of us, the economy, our personal wealth and well-being, that of our family and friends, our neighbors. And when you look at the fact that you're getting more money in your paychecks because less are being withheld, that you're actually getting a refund from the IRS because you didn't reconfigure your forms, not realizing, oh, you're actually paying less in taxes, you're giving a free loan away to the IRS. You look at that and you see that you're now getting different perks from the place that you work. Maybe you're working for Delta and just got a 16% bump in a bonus, which is the equivalent of about 2 months worth of pay because you just had a record year. You had a record year because the economy is doing so well. And when all of a sudden you've got a little bit extra money to take care of your family in North Bend or in Everett or in Olympia, things look really, really good, and you don't want to stop that. You may not like the president, but you do like the fact that you're earning more money and that you're feeling more secure. That's hard to beat unless there's a huge scandal attached to that candidate. And that's exactly what this is about. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, and our live coverage of the impeachment trial will be dipping in and out of what's going on the Senate floor right now. Representative Adam Schiff, he is now speaking. He's making the case. He's trying to pretend that there's this big conspiracy to go after Ukraine, all for his own personal benefit, the president. We'll tell you why in more detail that's nonsense. And we're going to give you very, very specific points that you need to learn so you can make them when your neighbors who are Democrats or your uncle who comes over who's a Democrat and wants to argue with you, so that you can just put them in their place, give them some facts, and hopefully stop these lies from spreading to the point that it's going to damage this president and damage this country. We're going to get to that when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rancho Show.
You're listening to continuing impeachment coverage on AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, a special edition as we take a deep dive into a historical moment. This is a historic moment for this country. They are impeaching a president. Now, there's no reason to believe that the president is going to be kicked out of office. There's no reason to believe that any Republican is looking at this in the Senate and siding with the Democrats. Now, of course, that could change. Certainly possible that there are some Republican senators who are keeping things close to their vests. But there's not a single one out there right now who's given any indication that they're going to vote to remove him from office. And a big reason is that they don't have a crime. The Democrats today, Adam Schiff in particular, over and over and over again, wanted to talk about quid pro quo. bribery. And yet, Jay Sekulow, the president's lawyer, made this observation.
Adam Schiff today talked about quid pro quo. Notice what's not in the articles of impeachment. Allegations or accusations of quid pro quos. That's because they didn't exist. So, you know, there's a lot of things we'll rebut, but we'll do it in an orderly and, I hope, more systematic fashion.
Now, that's important for you guys to know. Because as you are out there defending the president or defending the presidency, as you're fighting for this country to not go down this path of political impeachments, people are going to tell you quid pro quo, right? They're going to say bribery. They heard it so often coming from the Democrats for months. Bribery, bribery, bribery. So when they do that, and you're in a position where you're looking for a little bit of a civil conversation, ask them why was bribery not included in the articles of impeachment, and I'm willing to bet that they're going to say to you, what are you talking about? That's a law. Of course it is. Yes, it is. They talked about it the entire time. Now, if you're arguing with someone who is arguing back in good faith, this is what you do. Pull out the article of impeachment. It's online. It's very easy to find. You can get both of them. And they're not very long either. They're very short. Put it up on your phone. Put it up on your computer screen. And ask them to point to the part concerning a crime of bribery. Bribery is illegal. The way that they're talking about it, it is illegal. So ask them to show us what law was broken in the article of impeachment. They're not going to be able to do it because it doesn't exist. And at that point, here's what's going to happen. Again, if you're arguing with someone who's doing so with good intent, meaning they're not political hacks, they're not just taking a position because they hate the president, but they truly believe something wrong happened, they're going to see that quid pro quo isn't there. And they're going to start to question the narrative that they've been told from House Democrats, from Senate Democrats, and from the media. All of a sudden, they're going to say, wait a minute. That is a good point. Why isn't it in the article of impeachment? Now, maybe right then and there, they're not going to change their mind completely. They still might say, yeah, but I don't like his conduct. Okay. But you've just opened up just a little bit in their minds of doubt. And that's how this works. Because the next time you get into a discussion with them, whether it's on impeachment or some other issue, they're going to know at least you're making a good faith effort to stay in the lane of facts. Adam Schiff is not about facts. He's not about facts at all. He's about pushing a talking point that they cannot back up with evidence. That's why they're asking for more documents. That's why they're asking for more witnesses. Now, there was a Washington Post story today concerning the possibility of some kind of witness trade. We'll give you Bolton, but you give us Hunter Biden. We're going to talk about that when we come back. We're going to talk about the importance of witnesses and why so many Republican senators up till this point so far have said no on the witnesses. Is that the right move? Is that the right strategy? We'll explore. Josh Hammer is the editor-at-large for The Daily Wire. He's also a lawyer. He's going to be stopping by in the next hour as well. This is the only show on the only station that's giving you the tools you need, not just to understand what's going on in D.C., but to be sure that you're ready to take on any Democrat who wants to push the ridiculous impeachment sham.